In today's class, therefore, we will go over St. Augustine. Everyone should have an outline of 2 pages, St. Augustine's contribution to Catholic theology. Two boxes have been, you might pass these around, for questions. Because the last half hour or so of the class, as you know, is devoted to answering your questions. First, a biographical summary of St. Augustine's life. And we take this at some length. First, before baptism, and then after baptism. He was about 33 when he was baptized, and therefore he spent 33 years in, let's call it, paganism. As we know, his mother had been canonized as St. Monica. His father will not be canonized. His father's name in English would be Patrick Patricius. And as we know, in the early church, not a few marriages were mixed marriages, as Monica's was to Patrick. And he was a pagan to his name. That is Patrick. He had a brother, and then the brother was father of 2 nuns. Saint Augustine's sister was superior. So he had a brother and a sister, and then beyond that, we're not all that sure how many children were in the family. His mother did instruct him as a child in Christianity, and by 16 his passions took over Augustine's life completely. And that, by the way, that age 16 is about the age. Many parents do not understand what happens to their children. Well, as they reach puberty, and that means not just the ability to reproduce themselves physically, but their mind begins to develop and they ask questions. And those are the crucial years. You may be sure that Monica gave her boy good instructions. Unfortunately, as we know, he was not baptized. We're not sure why, but most likely the father did not want it. For 9 years, Augustine was a Manichaean. And, quoting him, he attacked Christianity with the most shameless and furious eloquence. In other words, Augustine was an enemy of Christianity. So that his conversion was not only from a life of lechery, it was also from a life of hatred of Christianity and what it stood for. And we know this from St. Augustine. And the bottom line, the main reason why Augustine was so hostile to Christianity was because of Christianity's teaching on chastity. And this, by the way, has been the hallmark of Christianity ever since. And the attacks, for example, now on the Pope, on the Church, and even, somebody asked me yesterday, what did I think of all the allegations being made about priests? I believe most of them are not true. Over the years I've been involved, and still involved, deeply involved, in defending some of these people, and there's no question there's a conspiracy to discredit the Catholic Church from top down. Augustine, therefore, was, you might say, true to form. And his very, you might say, passionate nature led him in two directions. One, of course, to almost unbridled license in his enjoyment of sex pleasure. But then correspondingly, on the mental level, Augustine did, what a smart thing he did. He joined the Manichaeans. What did the Manichaeans claim? That there were two gods. A good God was the author of everything good, and a bad God was the author of everything bad. And it all depends on which God takes over your life. So God, the good God, would of course give his people the virtue of chastity. Those who were under the enslavement of the evil deity, what could they do? In other words, Manichaeism denied a free will. And over the years, especially in teaching Protestant theology, I tell my students that Protestantism is simply Manichaeism restored. Manichaeism claimed, as we've said a moment ago, that there were two deities, the evil deity, the source of everything evil, the good deity, the source of everything good. Therefore, neither the good nor the evil living people are really free. It all depends on which God has mastery over your life. Then, Calvin combined the two deities in one. Luther started Protestantism, but Calvin was the genius behind it. And for Calvin, it's one God, but one God who has, as you remember, who has predestined some people for heaven, and then he ensured that they would be living good, virtuous lives. Others, whom the same God would, he wouldn't say condemned to hell, just did not give them the grace they needed to live good lives. They would then go to hell. And the only thing you have to find out in life, make sure that you belong to those who are predestined. And if you belong to those who are predestined, then you are saved. Protestantism has so deeply penetrated the Western world, and we can thank Manichaeism for that. In any case, Augustine, once he discovered he had a free will, was converted. So, conversion factors, especially for the Manichaean bishops, show their incompetence in arguing with Augustine. And this is well to know. These Manichaeans have bishops. As I've told people over the years, there has never been a heresy, none, which has succeeded, even to get on the history books, without having the backing of bishops. Without bishops, no heresy will succeed. And that is a problem in the church today. On which, of course, we could have not just a lecture, but a whole course. Secondly, the Platonist, or second, St. Ambrose, his mother prevailed on Augustine to attend the sermons of Ambrose in Milan. And what Augustine admired in Ambrose was his intelligence. And then from admiring Ambrose's intelligence, he gradually then found the true fact. Thirdly, he was enamored of the Platonist philosophers who convinced Augustine that all being is essentially good, that there exist angels and spiritual realities like God and the human soul. In any case, Augustine's conversion was at least partially due to philosophers following Plato, for whom the spiritual world was very real. Thirdly, that was already the fourth thing, reading of the scriptures, especially St. Paul, who remembers what St. Paul says in his letter to the Romans, chapter 3, verses 13 and 14. Who remembers? Well, would somebody go to the trouble of looking it up in the New Testament? Anybody have a copy of the Bible here? So, Romans chapter 13, verses 13 and 14.
Chapter 13?
Would you read it, please, out loud? Read it out loud.
Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in gambling and impurity, not in contention and envy, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh in its concupiscence.
Okay. In other words, Augustine recognized in St. Paul's statement what is the common heritage of all of us with a fallen human nature. And behind the distinction that Paul makes is the fact that we have a free will enlightened by the mind, where the mind can recognize what is good and what is evil, and then because the mind can recognize it, this is Augustine. There must be a free will. Otherwise, the mind would be absolutely useless and worse. What good would it be for our minds to recognize that there are certain actions that are good and others that are evil, unless we have the power to choose between the good and the evil? Then he made a retreat, and with his mother and some friends, baptized with his son, Adeodatus. What does Adeodatus mean? Given by God. Baptized in 387, and I understand his mother died the same year. No, she died. I think she died in 89. She died a year and a half later. Oh, no. Very next year. Mother died, fall of 387. I was right in the first place. Her work was completed. Now, the account of his mother's, not so much death, but the mystical experience that Augustine had in the company of his mother is described in the Confessions.
Those numbers aren't very clear.
Yeah.
Those numbers are those?
I tried to decipher them last night.
Uh-huh.
And it was already past midnight. I did not think I should spend any more time trying to decipher it. My apologies. Then, Augustine sold all his property, gave the proceeds to the poor, remember? Founded a monastery on one of his estates, already alienated. Prevailed to be ordained in 391. Founded another monastery on church property, and he abolished the abuse of banquets in chapels. That's the late 4th century. They had problems then. You've got problems now. Remember the story of St. Francis of Assisi? Our Lord, remember, appearing to him and told him to repair his church. It began with a local church, which was in shambles. Well, what Christ really meant was repair the church, which was in such a mess in the early 13th century. All we need is Augustine's, Francis's, and others. And that's why we need strong, real people. Coadjutor, made coadjutor to Bishop Valerius, so became Bishop of Hippo in 396, 9 years after his conversion, at the age of 42. Then wrote his confessions at the beginning of his episcopate. I would say the confessions of Augustine are the most revealing of any autobiography in Christian history. As bishop, he retained the monastic life. This, by the way, is something that we should both pray for and, speaking to priests, to strive for. In other words, the secular clergy as we know them certainly, priests can operate in their priesthood, exercise their ministry while living, you might say, either alone, maybe two, perhaps three in the rectory. Remember from the very beginning, and Augustine was one of the pioneers, the church has encouraged priests to live in community. In other words, to be under superior and to have some rule of life. So they don't just get up whenever they please and during the day could just, you might say, live their own freelancing lives. Augustine then established his whole diocese. He made all of his priests in the diocese monks. How's that? Of course, such a justice as we're called for, but the idea being that as a bishop, he was also superior of his clergy. How could therefore give them not just recommendations or directives, but even give them orders on their own daily lives? He made a famous distinction, which I thought was worth quoting, between enjoyment and use. And I did realize it's in Latin. To enjoy, fruit, to enjoy is to love something ardently for itself. To enjoy is to love something ardently for itself. They being that are to be loved for themselves are the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Only God is to be enjoyed. All other things are to be used.
Ooh.
One of the classic statements of Christian wisdom. Only God is to be enjoyed. Everything else is to be used. In other words, everything else, beginning with one very pleasant and that's the enjoyable creature that is to be used but not enjoyed for itself, namely ourselves. Everything is to be used. His distinction, Augustine's distinction between enjoyment and use. In other words, what you enjoy, you love for itself. That's, I repeat, Augustine's language. And that is why our English language is not absolutely useless, but it is very, very difficult to use and teach the Catholic faith. I cannot tell you how hard it is to teach the Catholic faith in English. And I'm not exaggerating. Because the English language just does not have the concept. The meaning of the English word that they use now from almost 500 years of Protestantism, the English language is notoriously not Catholic. His Episcopal house then became a monastery. The clergy were required to practice evangelical poverty and follow a religious rule. And this is one of the wishes of one modern pope after another. Our present Holy Father, as you know, is a Carmelite under vows. His disciples then also became bishops and started other monasteries. Now, some facts about the sources of the ocean of literature that Augustine has left us. The essential rule of St. Augustine has been followed now for 1600 years. He is found in what he called the life and customs of his clerics. His famous letter, 211, to convent nuns, where his sister was superior, is the basis of the rule of St. Augustine, adapted for men, about 500 AD. Then, his areas of activity, mainly five. First, administration of the diocese. And over the years, since I began reading Augustine in my early Jesuit life, I was struck by a man who was not only a genius intellectually, but a zealous, hard-working man. I thought to myself, my gosh, look at this. It's about two shelves of books that he wrote, and bishop of the diocese. In other words, if you're going to be a follower of Christ, you don't loaf, you work. So, and he did not neglect his diocese. Let me just say one word about Augustine's administration of his diocese. It was just sheer wisdom for Augustine to say that all the clergy in his diocese were to follow a set rule of life. It makes sense. Because then, if you have a set rule of life, and then people study that rule, understand it, and commit themselves to follow it, Well, then you're going to have to be watching, see how they're behaving. It's internal. This year, Mother Teresa told me she had $510. And of course, those are just novices. In now over 90 countries. And the only way, and having worked with her now for 18 years, the only way that would be possible is to provide a rule of life that is specific. And down to her. And she's constantly writing letters to her sisters, explaining and commenting on the rule. Because then, people with a rule of life, they don't have to be somebody always keeping an eye on them. Because they have their own rule to which they commit themselves. Then preaching, which took him, as he says, from meditation, which he regretted. And much of his preaching, by the way, left before the days of recording. Much of Augustine's preaching has now or since been published. People took furious notes. And several took notes, so when one missed, the other again. And three, innumerable writings. And I say innumerable because there were some of the called pseudo-Augustinian writings. Writings were not really sure, absolutely certain, that he, Augustine, wrote. But it's extensive. Four, participation in many bishops' councils. In other words, he was a busy man. And five, coveting heresies, especially three. Manichaeism, Donatism, and Pelagianism. In my estimation, the greatest mind in the Church's history, always have to say St. Paul outside the Scriptures. I believe Augustine had the greatest mind in Christianity, just for sheer genius of intellect. Now the next page on his doctrine. Remember what we're doing. This is church history, am I clear? I'm just going into some depth on one very important person. That's what I will do. We'll choose either an important person or an important event and analyze that either person or event as an illustration of the church's history. Now, Augustine's doctrine. While Augustine's teaching literally spans the whole of Christian revelation, he talks about everything. Yet, his defense of the true faith against, and remember those three names, because those three names, Manichaeism, Donatism, and Pelagianism, they are plaguing the church today. They have plagued the church now for almost 1700 years. So especially those three brings out those aspects of Christianity which pertain to the consecrated life. And maybe just bring on what I mentioned at some length during our class on Veritatis Splendor. The church's vocabulary tries to keep up, does keep up, with the changing ideas. We call in the church today those who live a consecrated life, those who bind themselves under vow to live what we call the evangelical counsels. That is the essence of consecrated life. Then between religious who live in the community and those who don't live in the community, they are called religious institutes, and the others are called secular institutes who do not live in the community. However, if there is one thing the present Pope is determined to bring out and to clarify, that while there are some people who have the grace to make a lifetime commitment to living evangelical counsels, there never was a day, the Pope would say, there never was a day when Christians could dispense with the practice of the counsels. But in our day, and in the centuries to come, to be a true follower of Christ, one must. And that really is the basic theme of every Gaudium Spes. To be a true follower of Christ, everyone who calls himself a Christian or for us a Catholic must not merely resign himself, but voluntarily, freely choose to do many things which are not binding under sin. And that is what's behind consecrated life. For some 15 years, whenever summers I was free, I would teach in Arlington, Virginia, at the Notre Dame Institute. And for the last several years, 60, 70, even more students, evening classes, 2 hours of class, all graduate courses, all college graduates, many times not a single priest or religious in class, all lay people. I think I should spend some time on this because that's what Augustine wrote out in his day, and the Pope is bringing out in our day. That there must be dedication beyond what we call just the moral level of observing God's commandments. There must be such a love of Jesus Christ as to give oneself to Him, following Him. And we almost closed the last class on this note, remember? That Christ telling the rich young man when he said, I've kept all these, remember, commandments, get it? Commandments from my youth. What more should I do? Then Christ told him, if you wish to be perfect, then go sell what you have, what you own, give the proceeds to the poor, and come follow me. And then goes back to St. Augustine. And only in the measure in which members of the church are so totally committed to the following of Christ, that they don't ask themselves, do I have to do this? No. They are so enamored of Jesus Christ, so want to be like Him, that they will go far beyond what they have to do. And my one hope is that I'm talking to the right audience. And before this course is over, there'll be on more than we have so far said in several years we've had a course. And with the publication of the Catechism of the Catholic Church in English, there must be, there better be, dedicated people who are not satisfied with doing Well, they have to. Okay. Now, Augustine's teaching, first against Manichaeism, and in Manichaeism, which claimed there are two gods, one good and another evil. Here's a six-statement summary of Manichaeism. And my friends, except for the big words, Manichaeism, Pelagianism, these errors, having once penetrated into Christian circles, they have remained among Christians ever since. These three are the main plagues that are tormenting the Catholic Church today. The source of more evil or sin is what? The source of more evil or sin resides in the free will. Who taught that? The Manichaeans or Augustine? Augustine. Against whom? Against the Manichaeans who claim it's the evil God. You name it. Over the years, I've read the books, and now I ask. I'm told not a single book in the social sciences that recognizes either human freedom or much less divine grace. We're conditioned. We are heredity, environment, and education. That is why we're pouring billions, say, into what we call, say, the slums. And destroying millions of lives by depriving them of the opportunity of using their own free will. In the current issue of the Human Life Review, there's a devastating article by a man who said the United States should re-examine and scuttle his whole welfare system. For a girl to have a child out of wedlock is now canonized by the state, and she's provided with all the luxury, all the help. Again, we have only one soul, as it goes, not two. One emanating from the good principle and the other from the evil principle. We are not, by the way, who wrote Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Who? 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 You heard about it, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, and I've heard
of it. Who?
Stevenson.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, how many of you can finish this sentence? You know what I'm going to ask. The capacity of the human mind to forget is? Thanks. Now, once more. Who wrote Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Robert Louis Stevenson.
You say he wrote that?
It's not one of my favorite books.
You're sure?
Positive.
Right. Would you agree? Anybody else have a suggested name? He's just telling us something about our computer age. Our memories are like sieves. So in other words, we are not dual personalities. We are one person, created by God. All being material and spiritual is essentially good, since God is its author. And remember, the essence of being good, and this is Augustine, the essence of being good is being directed to his divinely ordained purpose, what is good, that which is going towards acting as it should to attain the purpose for which God created it. 4. Evil is always a privation of some good that should be present. In other words, evil is not something positive. It is rather a lack, a privation of something that should be there. God is pure spirit. He is not corporeal. Now that needs to be said. In other words, we have a combination of both spirit and matter. The angels are pure created spirits. And can you imagine anybody making a comment about something not being important, saying, well, it really doesn't spirit. It doesn't spirit. What are you talking about? Talk about being in a materialistic culture. It doesn't matter. Number 6. There is no contradiction between the Old and the New Testaments. And that should be carefully both understood and, I would say, can be very clearly grasped by following the teaching of the present Holy Father in direct outer splendor. If there was one basic theme that the Holy Father is at pains to bring out, is that when God became man, he just immeasurably, you might even use the word infinitely, elevated the new law from the old. Why is that important? Because three powerful forces are at work. Three powerful forces are at work to erase what the Pope is telling us. Morality, the only sound morality in the world, we believe, is that based on Christianity. But then Christ elevated Old Testament morality. What three religions, powerful, one very large, one very small, but all three very powerful in shaping the thinking of billions in the world today who do not believe what Augustine and now the present Holy Father says? They are Judaism, Islam, and Protestantism. The three most powerful forces in the world, shaping the thinking of most of the human race. And they just do not believe, just don't believe. But either Augustine taught here that, no, there's no contradiction. Well, the New Testament is, well, the divine sublimation, as you may call it, of the Old Testament. The Old Testament is a preparation for the new. Okay. Now, Augustine's writings against the Donatists, by the way, this is too important to not finish. Well, we'll just pick up the questions in a few minutes. and handle the questions as much as we can, but then either finish this today or our next class. Donatism, which claimed that only holy people belong to the church. The Donatists were the first Puritans, and we know what happened. This is during the age of persecution, when so many of the Christians apostatized. We have the record of many wonderful martyrs. Great. We don't have that much of a record of many who did not remain firm in their faith. Well, the persecutions would rise to a furious pitch and then relent. One emperor would succeed another. His successor would be more lenient towards Christians than his predecessor. As a result, many then Christians wanted to return to the church, to the faith. But